C.H. Spurgeon, I think we mentioned this a little while ago, C.H. Spurgeon said that the book of John is so shallow that a child is able to swim in it, paddle in it, but it's also so deep that an elephant is able to swim. In other words, Jesus is these words of John's gospel are both really simple, but at the same time, they're really deep. And in the verses that we're looking at this morning, that's definitely true. I think the big point of these verses is something that's actually really, really simple. Something that we can all understand, whether we're young or whether we're old. But at the same time, there's these kind of layers of complexity to it. It's actually very, very incredibly deep truths. And there's loads that could be said today, which we don't have time to say. So it might actually be worth, when you get home over this week, spending some time with your family or on your own, just looking back over these verses and trying to look a little bit more deeper at some of the things that we haven't managed to cover this morning. But what I want to do this morning, I want to give you five really big W's. Five big W words, okay? Hopefully you young ones should be able to see that there's space to write down your five big W words this morning. And these five words might seem really, really random words, all right? You might think, what have they got to do with anything, these five words? But hopefully, as we go through these verses, we're going to see that these five words actually help us to understand the big point of this passage. So what I want you to do, I want you to try and guess these five words, okay? Just one at a time. So the first word, there's going to be some emojis coming up on the screen. It's a W word. And what I want you to try and do is shout out, what's the word here? Any of the children first before the adults. Can anyone work out what that word might be? A word beginning with W. Go on, a little bit. Woman, brilliant. So that's the first word. Make sure you get that down on your sheet, that word woman. So let's just have a look down at these verses, John chapter 4. Jesus is starting to gain a little bit of attention from the Pharisees. We read about that in the first few verses, didn't we? And he realizes he needs to leave Judea and needs to go back home. So he needs to go back to his hometown, which is Galilee. And on the way back to his hometown of Galilee, he has to go through a place called Samaria. And according to verse 6, it's now the middle of the day, so it's hot, he's tired, and he decides he's going to stop off in this place called Samaria. He's going to stop off by this well to take a little bit of a rest. And while he's there, we're told that a Samaritan woman, there's the word again, woman, came to the well to draw some water. And if you look down at verse 7, Jesus says to this woman, please will you give me a drink? So he says to this Samaritan woman. Now, you're probably thinking, that's an ordinary question, isn't it? You're at a well, a woman's come, she's got a bucket to draw some water from the well. You're going to say to her, aren't you, please can you give me a drink? Normal question, big deal. But John tells us that this is actually far from a normal question. This isn't an ordinary question. Now, verse 9, the Samaritan woman said to him, you're a Jew, and I'm a Samaritan woman, how can you ask me for a drink? And then it's here, this is what he says. For Jews do not associate with Samaritans. What does that mean? It means, in other words, Jews don't like Samaritans, and Samaritans don't like Jews. In actual fact, it's actually stronger than that. It would actually be the word hated. The Jews hated the Samaritans, and the Samaritans hated the Jews. That's not a very nice word, is it? Hated, but that was the reality. It's almost like Liverpool fans and Everton fans, except 10 times worse. They really don't like each other. This wasn't just a friendly rivalry. This was like a deep-rooted hatred. They wouldn't go near each other. They wouldn't eat together. They wouldn't spend time together. They wouldn't mix together. They wouldn't worship together. They don't live together. They don't even speak to each other. Now, we don't have time to go into all the Old Testament background, which explains why that's the case. But John tells us all that we need to know. Jews hated Samaritans, and Samaritans really hated the Jews as well. But here's Jesus, and what does he do? He sees a Samaritan woman, and he goes over to her, and he speaks to her. He speaks to her. But that's not even the most shocking thing. That is shocking, but there's something that's even more shocking than that. Not only was she a Samaritan, but she's also a woman. A woman. Now, in Jesus' day, Jewish men did not speak to women in public. Never mind a Samaritan woman. They never spoke to women in public. You would never see a Jewish man never ever speaking to a Samaritan woman. And we're told a little bit about this woman, aren't we? She's clearly a bit of a loner. It's the middle of the day, and she's on her own, drawing water from a well. That wasn't normal at this time. Normally, women would go in groups at either the start of the day or the end of the day when it wasn't very hot, when it was a bit cooler, to draw their water. This woman's there in the middle of the day, on her own, drawing water. She's a loner. She's an outcast. She's the kind of woman that today no one would want anything to do with. She's the kind of person that people would cross the road to avoid. She wouldn't have a chance. We think she shouldn't have a chance with Jesus. What's Jesus doing speaking to a woman like this? And yet Jesus speaks to her. I don't know if anyone watched any of the football. Did anyone watch the World Cup? Put your hand up if you watched any of the World Cup. Yeah. Did anyone keep your hand up if you watched any of the Cape Verde games? Do you see Cape Verde? No? Yeah, some hands have stayed up, yeah. Everyone said when Cape Verde came into the World Cup, they said they've not got a chance, didn't they? Not got a chance. Cape Verde have got a population of about 500,000 people, which sounds like a lot of people. It's actually not a very big population, very small country. Everyone said they didn't have a chance, but the first game they were playing, the European champions, weren't they? Spain, and they drew with them. And then they were playing Uruguay, who aren't too bad either, and they drew with them. Then Saudi Arabia, and they drew with them. And then they got through the group stages, and then they played Argentina, who were the World Cup holders, got to the final, didn't they? And they very narrowly just lost against them. An extra time, wasn't it? This woman was a little bit like that. She didn't have a chance when it came to Jesus. He's not going to want anything to do with a woman like this. But Jesus had something to say to this woman, didn't he? And I think that's really the main point of these verses. That gets to right at the very heart of these verses. Jesus really did come for everyone, anyone. Just a chapter ago, the children weren't in, but as adults, we saw at the start of chapter 3 that we met this guy called Nicodemus, didn't we? Nicodemus was a religious guy. He was a Jew. He was a popular guy. He was a really morally good guy. Everybody looked up to Nicodemus, an upstanding member of society. And this woman is the complete opposite to Nicodemus, isn't she? She couldn't be any more different. She's a peasant. She's a Samaritan. She's a woman. She's an outcast. She's a failure, really. And yet Jesus could not care less. In fact, he speaks to her in exactly the same way that he speaks to Nicodemus. No, it's no different to Nicodemus, really. You know, this morning, it doesn't matter if you are a politician or a peasant. It doesn't matter if you're a priest or a thief. It doesn't matter if you're a CEO of a big business, you have loads of money, or if you're the poorest person here. It does not matter when it comes to Jesus. It doesn't matter who we are, everybody needs Jesus. And we're going to sing a song now, which is going to be played on the screen. So we're going to stay seated for this song. And I want you to listen to the words. It's a children's song, but it repeats that truth back to us. Everybody needs Jesus. It doesn't matter who you are, everybody needs Jesus. Hopefully it's going to work with this. Anyone shout out? Anyone? Yeah, Rasmus? Wedding, that's it, wedding. So we've had woman. The next word's wedding. Make sure you get that down on your sheet. Wedding. Now you might be thinking, that seems like a bit of a random word. I don't see anything about a wedding in these verses that were read to us this morning, in this story. Well, let me explain. That idea of a wedding has come up quite a lot in the first three chapters of John's Gospel. And I think it comes up again here. I don't know if you noticed what this well was called. In the verses that we had, I don't know if anyone noticed what this well was called. Verse 6 tells us, doesn't it? Jacob's well. Now, it's very interesting. When you look into Jacob's well, a well was the place where Jacob met his wife-to-be, Rachel, and they got engaged. A well was also the place where Isaac obtained a wife, Rebecca, and they got engaged. A well was also the place where Moses met his wife, Zipporah, and that's where they got engaged. Apparently, if you want to find a wife, the place to go is a well. Go and hang around by a well. That's not advice, just an observation. But I think the thing John wants us to see here is that when Jesus meets this woman at a well, he's actually offering, and he offers her living water. This is almost like a wedding proposal. This is almost like a marriage proposal. Not only is she a Samaritan, not only is she a woman, not only does Jesus speak to her, but now, even more shocking, he's giving her the impression that he wants a loving relationship with her. And you can't help but think, Jesus must have got the wrong woman here. You know, this is, it's an interesting choice of bride, isn't it? Maybe he doesn't really realize what she's like. I wonder if you young people have ever thought to yourself, I wonder who in the future, who I'm going to marry. I imagine the girls think about that a little bit more than the boys do. Yeah. Maybe you girls think about marrying your Prince Charming. You know, maybe someone like this on the screen. Next one, next, there you go. Prince Charming. That's off Shrek, isn't it? Someone handsome, someone who's attractive on the inside and on the outside. Well, here we see Jesus, the great bridegroom, promised in the Old Testament, lovingly moving towards someone who is actually the opposite to beautiful. Moving, not offering a romantic relationship, but a relationship with God. Jesus moving towards the unlovely, the broken, the sinful, the weak, and offering a relationship with God. Another reminder, isn't it? Jesus really did come for everyone. Anyone who will trust him. Everyone really does need Jesus. So that's two. We've had two W words. Can anyone tell us, can you shout out what the two first W words were?
Woman and wedding.
Woman and wedding. Brilliant. Thank you. Next W word. It's a very easy one. Water. Well done. It's all coming from John and Jenny's three. Water. It's interesting here, isn't it? Jesus asks this woman for a drink of water, doesn't he? It's him who seems to be thirsty. But then it's shocking, isn't it? Because Jesus then tells her that she's actually the one who needs water. She's actually the thirsty one. Verse 10. Jesus asked her, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, so if you knew who it was that you were talking to, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. Jesus has turned this conversation around, hasn't he, to show that this woman is actually the one who is really thirsty. And Jesus says, if you just ask, I will satisfy that thirst. If you just ask, I could give you living water. Now, to us, that might not really sound like, that might not really mean much, but that word living water. But just look at this verse on the screen from the Old Testament, a verse from the book of Jeremiah, so written hundreds of years before Jesus. And this is what God said to the people of Israel. He said, my people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water. Now God's saying to the people of Israel, you've rejected me as the fountain of living water. Exactly the same word that Jesus uses here, isn't it? And instead, you're trying to drink from broken buckets that have holes in them that are leaking out. These buckets can't even hold water. In other words, he's saying, you're refusing to be satisfied in God, and you're looking elsewhere for satisfaction. And you're empty. Totally empty. And that's what we see with this woman, isn't it? She's tried everything. We see that in verse 17 and 18. She thinks that men are going to satisfy her. Satisfy her life. She's looking to quench this thirst, this inner thirst that she has for comfort and security and purpose with relationships, isn't she? Five husbands, it says she's had. Steve. And Steve didn't work out. Greg. And Greg didn't work out. Ryan. And Ryan didn't work out. Dave. And Dave didn't work out. And now she's with Jacob. And yet she's still got this deep thirst. So thirsty. This dissatisfaction with life. Let me ask you another question. Just imagine I took you in my car and I drove you out to this place on the screen now and I pushed you out of the car and I left you there. Okay, not a very nice thought. I left you there. How do you think you'd feel 2 days in? So all you've got is the clothes that you're wearing. How do you think you'd start to feel? What's that? Terrible. Yeah, you'd feel terrible. Anything else? How else? Adults as well. Hot. Thirsty. That's the big one, isn't it? Hot. Miserable. You'd feel lonely, maybe. You'd start to wonder whether this was going to be it, wouldn't you? Is someone going to save me? I think the big thing you'd start to feel 2 days in, you'd feel thirsty, wouldn't you? Thirst is actually probably the thing that you would that you'd actually end up dying from. Jesus is saying that on the inside, that was what this woman was like. She was thirsty. Not physically, but spiritually thirsty. But Jesus says to her, put your bucket down. Stop drinking the water that never actually quenches your thirst. Come to me and I'll give you living water. Living water. Just look down at verse 13 and 14. So what Jesus says, Jesus answered, everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life. Jesus is saying, isn't he? Essentially, come to me and I'll ban thirst forever. Eternally, you'll never be thirsty again. Imagine that. Never being thirsty again. I'll satisfy you. We maybe look at this woman and we think, you know, I'm nothing like her. Really, my life doesn't look anything like that woman's life. But really, if we're honest, naturally, on the inside, we are all like this woman. We'll go anywhere except God to try and satisfy this thirst that we've got on the inside. The Bible calls that sin. Maybe that's you this morning. Maybe you've tried to fill the void, this emptiness inside, to bring some meaning and purpose to life, but you're still thirsty. And maybe you say to yourself, you know, the next meal, or the next partner, or the next child that we have, or the next £100 will give me that deep satisfaction that I'm looking for. You know, if only I had a different job, if only I were married, if only I did better at school, if only I were more successful, if only I had a little bit of a bigger house, if only I had some more friends. And then we get what we want, and actually we're still just as thirsty as we were before. In fact, we're even more thirsty than we were before. It's almost like trying to fill the Grand Canyon with water with a teaspoon. Teaspoon by teaspoon, trying to fill the Grand Canyon. Just can't fill the void. Can't do it. And Jesus is like, come to me and I'll fill you. I'll satisfy you eternally. I'll give you eternal life. Whatever you've done, however bad you've been, however messed up, however many mistakes you've made in the past, trying to sort your life out. If you come to me and if you trust me, then I'll truly satisfy you, Jesus says. Isn't it amazing that six men didn't disqualify this woman from coming to Jesus? In fact, Jesus looked out for her and he invited her to him. Isn't that amazing? He knew, even when the conversation started, he knew just how messed up her life was. And yet he said, come, come to me. I'll quench that deep, unquenchable thirst. Jesus isn't embarrassed by her, is he? Not at all. No sin is too great that Jesus' mercy isn't greater. Jesus really did come for everyone. Everyone really does need Jesus. Over the next couple of weeks, we're going to learn a memory verse, which is up on the screen there. John chapter 4, verse 13. So I thought it'd be good just to try and get it into our heads a little bit this morning, just by repeating it out loud a few times together, okay? And we're going to spend some more time on this over the next few weeks. So let's repeat it out loud together, shall we? So together we say, Jesus answered, everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. John chapter 4, verse 13. Brilliant. Now this side of the room. We're going to really work this into our heads. We're going to say it quite a few times. All right, this side of the room then. Out loud together. Go for it. That was really, really poor. This side of the room. A little bit louder if you can, please.
Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. John 4, verse 13.
Okay, children. Go on, let's try and say this as loud as you can, because it has been pretty poor so far. So let's try and say it as loud as you can. One, two, three. Jesus answered, everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. John chapter 4, verse 13. Yeah. Right, so adults now, this time. Let's show the children how to do it really loud. Try and speak as loud as you can. Let's go. One, two, three. Jesus answered, everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. John chapter 4, verse 13. Brilliant. Hopefully that's starting to get into our heads. Maybe over the next week, try and repeat that verse quite a few times at home and try and get it into our heads and see if we can do a little bit better next week, shall we? See if we know it off by heart by next week. That'd be great. Let's sing, shall we? Remembering how good Jesus is to people like us, people who need his mercy. Let's stand and sing, his mercy is more. Okay, right. So we've had three W words out loud together. Woman, wedding. What's the last one? Water. Well done. Yeah. So what's the next one? Next W word.
Worship.
Worship. Well done. Worship. The Samaritan woman had started to realize, hadn't she, that this isn't just an ordinary man. This guy knows everything about me. Verse 19, she thinks he's a prophet, and she obviously feels a little bit uncomfortable with what the topic of conversation is. So she tries to change the subject, doesn't he? That's what we do, don't we, when we feel a little bit uncomfortable and it seems awkward. She starts to talk about worship. Verse 20, what does she say? She says, our ancestors worshipped on this mountain. So that's the Samaritans. They worshipped on this mountain. But you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is Jerusalem. So she's basically asking Jesus, who is it that's right here? The Samaritans, they worshipped on a mountain called Mount Gerizim, which was in, or just outside Samaria. And the Jews, they worshipped in the temple in Jerusalem. And she's basically, who's got it right, the Jews or the Samaritans? And Jesus' answer here is pretty shocking, isn't it? You'd expect him to say either one or the other. You'd expect him to say Jerusalem, probably, wouldn't you? Because he's a Jew. But look what Jesus says, verse 21 and then verse 23. Jesus basically says, the time has come when it doesn't really matter where we worship, but what matters is how we worship. That's essentially a summary of what Jesus says there. Just look at verse 23. Yet a time is coming and has now come when the true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. They're the kind of worshippers that the Father is looking for. They're the kind of worshippers that God wants. People who worship him in spirit and in truth. God is spirit. That's what we're told here, aren't we? He's everywhere at once. And Jesus is basically saying God is to be worshipped everywhere, by everyone, at all times. And Jesus is the truth. If we want to truly worship God, then we worship God through Jesus. That's what is being said here. So to worship God in spirit and in truth is to worship God everywhere, at all times, through Jesus. I don't know if you knew this, but worship isn't really just a Sunday thing. Worship isn't just when we kind of stand up and sing the songs together. That's one part of worship. That's not worship. True worship is an all-day, everyday kind of thing. It affects every area of our lives. True worship is day by day, day after day after day, trusting Jesus with our lives, believing his promises, relying on him as the all-satisfying one, rather than relying on other things to satisfy us and make us happy. So it doesn't matter, actually, whether we're in church on a Sunday or whether we're in the classroom on a Monday, that's a place to worship God. Trust Jesus. And it doesn't matter if you're in your bedroom on your own, or if you're in the school hall eating your lunch, or at the canteen at work surrounded by people, it really doesn't matter. That's where we worship. We trust Jesus there. And that leads to our very last W word, okay? This one's probably the hardest one, but it is in the passage if you're struggling, okay? So we've had woman, wedding, water, worship. The last one. Anyone know what that one is? It's a bit harder, that one, isn't it? Well. What's that? Well? No, not well. Good effort, though. Maybe have a little look down at verse 13. There's a W word in there, in verse 13. Go on, Rasmus. Whoever. I think this is the big point. I think this whole passage is there to show us what John chapter 3, verse 16 means when it says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him will not perish, but have eternal life." This is showing us just how big that word whoever is. It even includes a woman like this. Now you might think to yourselves, you don't know how bad I am. You don't know some of the things that I've done in my life. Jesus wouldn't want anything to do with me. Maybe you think to yourself, I'm not from the right family. Or you might think to yourself, I've got a bit of a checkered past. Or you might think to yourself, I've made some pretty big mistakes. Everybody else here seems to have their life all sorted out and together, but mine just doesn't feel like that. Well, just take another look at this Samaritan woman. Jesus calls worshippers to himself from everywhere. Different backgrounds, different skin colors, different nationalities. It's amazing. Devout Muslims come to Jesus. He calls them to the agitated atheist, the LGBT campaigner, criminals and law-abiding citizens, popular people and unpopular people, rich people and poor people, everyone. Jesus calls worshippers from everywhere. Because we all have exactly the same need, don't we? Deep down, we all need exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thirst. We need him. We need the thirst quencher. We need Jesus. There is no one too good that they do not need Jesus. And there is no one too bad that they can't be rescued by Jesus. That means you. And that means me as well. So I want to ask you the question as we finish. Who will you trust with your life? Will you trust Jesus with your life? Or will you continue to live with this unquenchable thirst? This thirst that you will never, ever satisfy. Honestly, you'll never satisfy this thirst. This deep void. This is a void, a thirst that only Jesus can satisfy. Let's sing again, shall we? Before we come to communion, a song which is written for children. And it's the first line of this song says this. Jesus said that if I thirst, I should come to him. No one else can satisfy. I should come to him. So let's stand and let's sing Jesus, strong and kind.